Hi. If you've been looking at the WBAI program guide, you will notice that what we are into is called miscellany. Actually, what it is a very abbreviated lesbian nation, 15 minutes. Just enough time, however, to read the next segment of the letter from Jane Alpert, which you have been expecting. There will be a third segment, a final segment, next week. So without further ado, we go into part two, the education of a feminist at large. My first year underground was very hard. Expecting to die for the revolution in a matter of months, I was unprepared to find myself not only alive, but living a rather unadventurous and secluded existence less than a year after disappearing. I found it increasingly difficult to get along with the friends with whom I was still in touch, especially with the men, who were becoming increasingly overbearing and critical of all my actions, as I was growing increasingly sensitive to their interference. Chafing at every restriction, hostile even to the one woman friend I really cared for, I finally decided to take off on my own, reasoning that it couldn't get much worse. I started to travel, and for a few months just roamed, almost aimlessly, from one community to another across the country. As I traveled, I slowly became aware that nothing was less relevant to the lives of most people in this country than the white left, with which I still identified myself. The leftist, and rightist for that matter, distinctions between working class and ruling class, hippies and straight people, youth and establishment, all seemed increasingly absurd to me. They seemed to determine nothing of certainty about anyone's attitude or political outlook. As I moved around, I could see more clearly than ever the oppression of Black, Chicano, Puerto Rican, and Indian peoples. Yet at the same time, I was learning concretely that women existed in well-defined subcultures within each white and third world community. Finally, all my experiences kept reminding me of one fact of my own identity that I was continually trying to forget, that I was a woman. Men, third world and otherwise, young and old, hippie and straight, related to me as woman, all my other interests or characteristics being, in their eyes, mere modifications of that one essential. Whether I was desired, rejected, abused, admired, ignored, treated with kindness or with hostility. It was basically because I was a female doing whatever it was I was doing. Women generally took their cue of how to relate to me from the way men related to me, or I to men. It occurred to me that this was no different from the way people I had known for years had related to me. But because we had known each other well, I had been aware of the subtleties in our relationships, to the point of being blind to the underlying structure. Of course I had heard feminists express these perceptions before, and had even asserted them myself occasionally, but I had never internalized them. I now began to think that if my politics were to be based on my own situation and not on someone else's perception of reality, I would have to deal with the fact that the rest of the world thought of me as a woman first of all, before it even listened to what I had to say. Together with these discoveries, I began to realize the astonishing impact the women's movement has had all over the U.S. in just a few years. I could see women everywhere, white, Black, brown, Indian, responding in their daily lives to the fact that some women somewhere had said, "Men oppress us." I came to know Chicano women living in a barrio who were organizing women's health care programs and women's anti-rape squadrons to patrol their own neighborhood. A white woman, mother of three, from a poor southern family and on welfare, talked to me with great eloquence about how she saw the courts, the police, the welfare system, and her ex-husband as all part of the same male-run system, which women needed to take over and run for their own benefit. A woman I met, who had been born into a wealthy and traditional Japanese family, told me she was filing for divorce against a husband who physically and mentally abused her, because she refused to go through life suffering from the same causes her mother and grandmother had before her. These women, all random examples, would not necessarily say or think that they were part of the women's movement. But they demonstrated to me, among others, that the changing consciousness represented by the women's movement has been more far-reaching than any public opinion poll on women's liberation would seem to show. As for the frequently heard opinion that third world women support third world liberation but not women's liberation, I believe that this is true chiefly of a few women who are highly regarded by third world male radicals, and hence are considered newsworthy by the media. Among the majority of third world women, it seems to me that the women's movement is spreading and its ideas are having increasing effect, just as among white women. The turning point of my personal rapprochement with feminism came when a year after I'd left New York as a fugitive, I joined a women's rap group composed of half a dozen other women of widely different economic backgrounds, ages, and family situations, brought together only by our common desire or desperate need to talk with other women about our lives. No one in the group knew who I was or that I was wanted on a federal warrant. I know, though, that they all sensed my unspoken inner turmoil, if not the specific causes of it, and in response gave me more positive emotional and intellectual support than I could have imagined possible from a group of strangers. They sustained me through the crisis I underwent after Melville's murder and the dramatic upheavals in my consciousness involved in that experience. Eventually, when a series of circumstances forced me to leave the area in which I'd come to know them, they gave me, as a group, the help and strength I needed to face yet another move into the unknown. The process of the consciousness-raising group, for me and for the other women involved, was one in which we began to be able to define ourselves as individuals and as women. Some of us had previously conceived of ourselves as exceptional women. Some of us thought being female necessarily meant being passive and dependent. But it soon became clear that we had come to the group, each in a private panic, of no longer knowing who we were. What we discovered in each other was the pulse of a culture and a consciousness which was common to us as women. We discovered it as something that had always been there, but that we had not previously recognized or felt able to trust. Trusting it, or gaining confidence in our thoughts, feelings, resentments, desires, and intuitions as attributes that we shared as a people, and which were therefore valid, became the basis of beginning to trust ourselves as individuals. I believe that the struggle to define oneself for oneself ultimately takes place in a realm of the mind in which one is always alone and unsupported. For some women, the existence of a women's group or even a women's movement has not been a necessary precondition of that struggle. Individual women of genius, artists, scientists, philosophers, activists, and visionaries, have left us written and other evidence to prove that throughout the history of patriarchy, some women have found it possible to call upon their inner powers to create and achieve and succeed. For each of these women, many others who were unable to leave us records have managed to define their individuality and assert themselves in the face of enormous male hostility. And yet the evidence we have proves ultimately only that no matter how many obstacles are in the way, a few women will possess the ability, determination, and special privilege to overcome them. In considering social change, it is of much more significance that today's women's movement has encouraged thousands of women who would have never done so before to discover and develop their unique talents, and to stand up against male prerogatives and values with originality and courage. Moreover, as increasing numbers of women are turning to art, science, and other creative efforts, a truly female, that is, a feminist culture, is beginning to take shape. It seems little short of miraculous that with so little in the way of facilities, still very few research grants, little access to the best laboratories, to substantial publishing contracts, and the like, our own culture has nevertheless managed to take root and flourish. Feminist newspapers, literary magazines, cooperative child care centers, anthropology collectives, legal clinics, poetry workshops, self-help medical clinics, counseling services, music groups, and graphics collectives are a few of the newborn alternative institutions providing the access for women whose values and vision are unacceptable to the patriarchy, or who choose not to pay the artistic and emotional price exacted by men in exchange for a share of male privilege. Even more significantly, the products of these alternative institutions and of the individual women involved with them or working on their own are qualitatively different from the products of men and male institutions. For instance, a feminist all-women's rock band sounds different from a male rock band or from an all-women's rock band trying to reproduce male music. They are not only singing different lyrics, but the melodies and harmonies and rhythms are different. Feminist anthropologists are approaching their subject from a different perspective and with different assumptions than male anthropologists or women anthropologists in the past, who had only male-defined standards and methods at their disposal. Feminist teachers are creating a different style of classroom situation with their women students. Feminist lawyers are helping their clients to use the law to help themselves. All of us are not engaged in such activities, but many of us share in the changing consciousness that these women are expressing publicly. And in light of the accomplishments already generated from this changing consciousness, I think we need to take another look not only at the old male supremacist assumptions about women's nature, but also at some of the assertions of the women's movement so far. Just what is the powerful source of this consciousness? That was Jane Alpert's paper, Mother Right, A New Feminist Theory, which WBAI received as a message from Underground a few weeks ago. We'll be back next week with the final portion of this paper on Lesbian Nation. This is Martha Shelley. Good night.